Hello, and welcome back to the SIGGRAPH Spotlight Podcast. We are excited and honored for the chance to bring you this latest discussion with two true industry legends, Ed Catmull and Tony DeRose. Dr. Catmull is co-founder of Pixar Animation Studios and president of Pixar and Walt Disney Animation Studios, not to mention the former VP of Lucasfilm's computer division. He has been honored with 5 Academy Awards for his work and is a recipient of both the ACM SIGGRAPH Stephen A. Koons Award for Lifetime Contribution to Computer Graphics and IEEE's John von Neumann Medal. Among many other outstanding accomplishments, Catmull authored the New York Times bestseller Creativity, Inc., Overcoming the Unseen Forces That Stand in the Way of True Inspiration, which was described by Fast Company as a book that just might be the most thoughtful management book ever. Tony DeRose is currently a senior scientist and lead of the research group at Pixar Animation Studios. He received a BS in physics from the University of California, Davis, and a PhD in computer science from the University of California, Berkeley. Tony is also a former University of Washington professor. In 1998, he was a major contributor to the Oscar-winning short film, Jerry's Game, and the following year was honored with the ACM SIGGRAPH Computer Graphics Achievement Award. In addition to his research interests, Tony is involved in the Pixar in a Box and Young Makers Program initiatives to help make math, science, and engineering education more inspiring and relevant for middle and high school students. We've included links to some of their amazing work in the show notes for you to check out. Now, let's turn things over to your SIGGRAPH 2018 Technical Papers Chair, Matthew Desbrun, to kick off the conversation.
All right. Hello. My name is Matthew Desbrun, and I'm thrilled to kick off today's discussion. I'm the Carl Brown Professor of Computing and Mathematical Sciences at Caltech here in Southern California. And I have the difficult but exciting job of running the technical papers program for the ACM SIGGRAPH 2018 conference this summer in Vancouver. For our listeners out there, we thought it would be great to chat a bit about the role and impact of the program, both on academia and in industry over the years. And we could not think of two better people to do just that than our special guest today, namely Tony DeRose, a senior scientist at Pixar, and Ed Catmull, the president of Pixar and Walt Disney Animation Studios. Both have been pillars of the scientific portion of the SIGGRAPH conference for years, so I cannot tell you how thrilled I am to talk to you guys today. Now, I could spend 10 minutes just listing your accomplishments if you want, but I thought it would be better if I let you guys introduce yourself with maybe a request to tell us what got you interested into computer science and in particular computer graphics early on. How about we begin with you, Ed?
Well, thank you, Matthew. I was basically in grad school when I first got introduced to computer graphics, but I did have 2 degrees as undergraduate, one in physics and the other in computer science. And the thing I loved that drew me in originally was the realization on the computer science side was that we were now at the frontier, you know, right at the edge of where things were. And then computer graphics was clearly at the frontier also. The original images were very crude, but you could look through that and see what the potential was. And for me, this was an important issue then, and it's still an important issue today. A lot of people judge something by what they see rather than seeing what the possibilities are in the future with it.
So you saw the potential in it.
Oh, yes. It was exciting. So they could say, oh, gee, this stuff actually looks pretty bad. Wow, what an incredible opportunity.
Okay.
So I immediately switched over to computer graphics. First of all, I was always drawn to the arts and the animation, and here was now the place to put them together. Mm-hmm. But in order to be able to produce art or animation, there were a lot of things that needed to be done. So those original images were made out of polygons. A lot of the displays were vector displays. You can only draw lines. So you just look at that and say, well, there's a series of problems about how you draw curved surfaces, how you make them look interesting, how you animate them, how you model them, what's the math underneath them, what's the lighting. And here was this new community of graphics people, which is initially very small, but they had formed a conference, And so this community became the group of people who worked on various aspects of these questions.
I see.
And I felt in general it wasn't a competitive community. It was a supportive one. And even to this day, a lot of my closest friends come out of the computer graphics world.
All right. That's quite a story. And I know that as a graduate student, you even had your left hand, right, digitized, and you made a movie that is now the Library of Congress.
Yes, and that plaster of Paris model of my left hand is sitting about 4 feet away from me here in my office, although one of the fingers broke off and I never found it.
That's a problem.
And I can't replicate it because I've got arthritis in my finger now.
That's a good point. What about you, Tony?
Well, my path shares some things in common with Ed's. I was a physics undergrad and, you know, just loved the idea that math and physics could explain so much of the natural world. I always knew I wanted to do research of some kind, so when I was entering my senior year as an undergrad, the obvious path was to go into physics, but I'd also discovered computing at my computer, community college. And I realized that, you know, if I went to grad school in physics, I'd be trying to add to the work of 400 years of brilliant people. Or I could go into computer science, which was maybe 30 years old at that point. So I decided that, well, I think I'll go for the young discipline. Maybe I can do something a little more fundamental there. Went into grad school thinking I was going to do AI initially, and basically the day I showed up at Berkeley for my PhD program, the same day Brian Barsky was starting. He had graduated recently from the University of Utah and was starting a graphics lab at Berkeley. So I took Brian's graphics class and immediately fell in love with graphics because it was an opportunity to take three of my loves, computer science, math, and physics, and make it all visual. So that was super exciting. I dropped AI and have been working in computer graphics since.
I can relate to this. The fact that you can see the results of what you're implementing and what you're deriving in terms of the math and stuff, that's special. But you know, Tony, it's not too late for you to switch back to AI. I'm just saying.
We'll come back to that maybe at the end of the conversation.
Okay, all right. All right, let me dive into questions about the actual SIGGRAPH Technical Papers program. So your careers have spanned both academia and industry. So what I wanted to know is what role has SIGGRAPH played, and in particular the Technical Papers program, what role it has played in your career? You mentioned, Ed, that there was really a community that came together because there were so many things to do initially in graphics. You almost started with a blank slate. But since then, this community has been growing and growing. There's been this yearly presence at the conference with fantastic papers. How did this help you in terms of exposure, maybe in terms of inspiration? How did it help you throughout your career?
Well, early on, this is after I graduated from Utah and went off to run this computer animation lab in New York
right.
at NYIT, we made the decision to publish all of our work. And we had, I would say, sort of like intellectual competitors, and these were all friends, but the other people wanted to make a movie too. And they had made the decision that since they were investing in these ideas for making films and images, that they would keep it secret. And we made the decision that we were going to publish everything. And the logic that I had at the time was that we were so far away from our goal that to think that somehow that we were close and we were going to keep it secret was folly. And that by publishing everything we said, it enabled us to engage with others and participate. And it was also a message to other people that we do publish. And it had a result that we had better bonds. We also had a lot of people join us who are some of the very best people over the years. And I believe that over my entire career, that philosophy has served us well. And even to this day, we publish papers. you know, people don't ask me, you know, should we publish the following idea? They just go ahead and write the paper. There's head of R&D or head of other things that will look at it. But basically, the whole idea is engage. And I still believe very strongly in that.
Okay. And Tony?
SIGGRAPH has been at the core of my career for, 35 years or something now. Mm-hmm. After I graduated from Berkeley, I started a computer graphics lab at the University of Washington. And so publishing at SIGGRAPH was, you know, the pinnacle of a research accomplishment. So I've basically spent, you know, full time since then working one way or another on SIGGRAPH papers. As Ed was saying, we continue to publish here at Pixar because, there's a number of reasons. One is the reason that Ed gave, which it, you know, helps to engage and influence the rest of the community. It also holds us to a higher standard, you know, knowing that your work is going to be reviewed by the, you know, smartest people in the field really forces you to think more deeply about what you're doing. And it's the rigor of the peer review process that really makes our work better. And finally, people, you know, by publishing, people know that they can come to Pixar and they're not going to drop off the, you know, they're not going to drop off the radar. They can still be visible at conferences. They can still be doing talks. They can still be doing cutting edge research and telling people about it.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. And to this day, this is still happening, and it's, you're still publishing a lot at SIGGRAPH. The small team of researchers that you have at Pixar is still very active, so it worked out just fine. All right, so looking back at the over 40 years now of SIGGRAPH, what do you think are the most important scientific advances in computer graphics and interactive techniques in general that you can think of? I'm giving you a hint of something that I always tell my students. I tell them that the early gamers of the game Pong, the people that play Pong, unwillingly really sponsored or funded today's scientific endeavors, because all the GPU supercomputers, GPU-based supercomputers, really came from the game industry and the fact that people were willing to play video games. So there's been some interesting advances in computer graphics that really impacted science in general. Do you have one of these advances in mind that's really made you particularly proud that it came from our community?
Well, if I look back over the years from the beginning of SIGGRAPH, we went through various phases. And the first one had to do with figuring out what's visible. Mm-hmm. So there were ways of trying to make that better. And coincident with that, there was research going on in how you get better lighting and illumination. What are the models for doing that? So there was that phase, and then it evolved into a phase of trying to have images that could match reality. So photorealism, in the sense of matching reality, which was extremely difficult, was a driving force for many years until we actually got images that did look realistic, and then you had to stop using that as the driving force. And along the way, the underlying computer technology, because of the rate at which it increased, which we all know about, kept meaning that the possibilities, or it kept allowing new possibilities and new ways of thinking about things that frankly were sometimes conceived earlier, but weren't really practical. So I'll give an early example. 49 years ago, Ivan Sutherland, with his the thing he put together at MIT, did the first virtual reality and augmented reality.
Right.
So next year is the 50th anniversary of this.
Right.
Now, the concept was put in place 50 years ago, mm-hmm. but you had to go through these stages in order to get to the point where it went from an idea to something which reached a level which began to affect people.
Right. The technology had to catch up, basically.
We had to catch up. So we then went on to this point where we had these, initially Evans and Sutherland was selling hardware, which we used. And then along came Silicon Graphics, which had much faster graphics. And so that provided enough graphics to enable the revolution in graphics to take place in the entertainment industry. And then as we're progressing with the algorithms, the images got to be good enough so that you could have these add-in cards, which displaced those high-end boxes from Silicon Graphics, and add-in cards could be put in PCs, and that made is the thing that allowed the games industry to really take off. Mm-hmm. So then we have this, it's a virtuous cycle from a graphics and a computer graphics point of view, and that is that the games industry, as you pointed out, produced a lot of money, which enabled the companies such as NVIDIA to make faster and faster chips, which was extremely expensive. But the concepts, what they needed, came out of academia and out of the entertainment industry. But when they made these faster chips, they were put into these cards, put into Unix boxes, so that we could advance the algorithm research in the universities and in the entertainment industry. So we benefited from the fact that the gamers were buying these things from these companies who were investing a huge amount of money. And this continues to this day. Mm-hmm. So the recent buzz about Oculus, for instance, was from the point of view of the press, was as if virtual reality had just been invented. But all that actually happened was the chips got fast enough that the lag went away.
Right.
And the lag was a noticeable thing. Right. And we're still on this path. I mean, it's a phenomenal path, and it hasn't stopped. And I don't see it stopping.
Okay. And Ivan has a lot to do with it. I agree.
The most important advance. I think there are kind of three milestones that really stand out for me, although there are another 10 that other people could certainly point to.
I'm sure, yes.
So this is very much a personal assessment. But I think one of the most impactful papers I read and still impressed by today is The Rendering Equation by Jim Kajiya. Mm-hmm. It took so many of the algorithms that seemed rather ad hoc and really put them on a firm scientific basis. So I just thought that was a stunningly, brilliant piece of work. And related to that is the development of stochastic ray tracing, which we later recognized as Monte Carlo integration. Mm-hmm. That, introduced a very general technique for simulating just about every visual effect, from motion blur to depth of field. So that really took that more theoretical work of the rendering equation and made it practical.
All right.
And then on the creative side, for me, a huge milestone was the production and release of Luxo Jr. That was really, I think, the first time where this nascent, technical toy that a bunch of nerds were playing with was really used for creative benefit, for storytelling. And I think that's when a lot of people really sat up and recognized that, oh, this medium is really going to go somewhere. It's a really powerful emotional medium.
Yeah, I would have loved to know Ed when he started Pixar, because at the time it was clearly not obvious that computer graphics could be used for full-length movies. And so I don't know how many people doubted this whole endeavor, but definitely Luxo Jr., I think, opened the eyes of many people. So I agree with you. Now, other questions. The SIGGRAPH technical papers often reflect the current trends in science and in technology. So in technology, that can be VR. We've had many waves of virtual reality, like Ed was mentioning. More recently, we had 3D printing that is now part of the SIGGRAPH community. And it can also be in terms of scientific trends, like wavelets. There was a time where wavelets was very big in science, and therefore it got into graphics right away. And nowadays, it's machine learning. We have the whole wave of machine learning coming to computer graphics to do wonderful things. What have you seen recently that excites you as part of this current trends and how it could transform computer graphics yet again, if any?
You mentioned one of the trends already that I think is really exciting. That's the use of machine learning techniques in computer graphics. And that's already starting to bear fruit in a pretty wide variety of computer graphics applications. And I suspect that, one thing that's happened repeatedly in graphics is we will borrow a technique, put our own spin on it, and then often contribute back.
Right.
So we make advances that end up having impact in other fields. You mentioned wavelets. I think that happened in the wavelet area. And I suspect that's going to happen in machine learning as well. We're right now in the early phase where we're largely borrowing techniques, but I expect pretty soon we're going to be contributing back techniques to machine learning that are motivated by the problems that we face.
Yeah, I think one analogy for that would be with simulation, where the simulation world came out of having to simulate reality. And in our world, it's to use all those techniques, but at the same time, we need to direct it. So it's not reality in the sense it was originally intended for. It's now this directable thing. So now it's a, you add some new techniques into a field. In addition to the machine learning, there is the fact that the chips are so fast now, and you've got this, the practicality of virtual reality, augmented reality, is going to have a remarkable effect. If you look at the virtual reality, then a lot of people go to one particular place, and that is storytelling, which is the hardest of all the places. But say, set that aside for a second. If you look at the entire domain of the possibilities there, then you can see things in ways that you couldn't before. And the perception that you have is different than it is in looking in stereo. So given the entire range, I mean, to be honest, storytelling is just that little one portion at the end of it. And it's extremely difficult. I think people misunderstand what it is. It's the kind of thing that's in the research stages. But I'll even express that, but I'm skeptical that that's going to be an important element of virtual reality. But the other things are without a doubt really important. And augmented reality, where we're newer at that, you can say, well, okay, that's going to become important too. And right now, it's like at the early days, you say, well, it isn't there. And some people judge it where it is, but it's not as bad as it used to when we started. Like people will look at it and judge it, and they would say no. Well, year after year after year, people discovering that they were wrong about the potential, they are more open to it, and there are more people who are predicting things that are wildly beyond what they understand.
I see.
But nevertheless, it's an area that's growing. It is absolutely an important research area, and we will see significant change there.
Okay.
And growth.
Perfect. Let me continue on this line of questioning. Something that I find really special and unique to for SIGGRAPH is that it continues to be so good at absorbing new ideas. The rapid adoption of new ideas is flabbergasting. Specifically, breakthrough papers tend to see their results used and referenced nearly immediately. And that contrasts a lot to other communities that might take several years sometimes to warm up to a new idea. What do you think? Why do you think that is? And how can we maintain and maybe even nurture this spirit within the computer graphics community for the future?
Well, personally, I think part of it is to have an organization which not only is looking for innovative ideas, but at the same time itself continues to evolve. That if they try to hang on to the way we used to do things or the glory days, then that's a death knell.
Right.
So you go beyond saying, I'm looking for the best papers, is to say, what are new ways of looking for papers? How do we change the nature of judging the papers? How do we allow in other concepts? And frankly, there have been times when the graphics community did not include something, and so it split off. And the extent to which we absorb and get excited about and allow new things to happen, the community will continue to be viable and healthy. And exciting.
I see. Tony?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think we've partly benefited from our growth out of the computer science community.
Right.
In the, I think a lot of the older, more established disciplines, you know, physics, mathematics, and so on, had become, you know, so focused on academic purity and rigor that it really slowed down the pace of innovation.
Right.
Whereas with our, you know, connection to computer science, computing equipment was changing very rapidly, which I think, you know, forced the algorithmic side to change very rapidly. And that just instilled a culture of very rapid innovation. We certainly try to keep our eye on rigor, but not at the expense of, you know, impeding progress.
Right, and even the technology, right? Like you were saying, technology moves so fast that you also need to keep up with it and maybe modify your algorithms to best leverage this new technology, like, for instance, GPUs.
Right, and if, you know, over time, as you look at the fact that we can compute phenomena so much more quickly, I think you'll see that the vast majority of those improvements have come from algorithmic improvements, you know, largely leveraging improvements in hardware, but the speedups that we've seen go way beyond Moore's law.
Right, right.
So there's an important principle here, and that is that any field, I think, becomes sort of stunted when it becomes pure. And one of the things that makes fields exciting is when you've got people in very different fields and pulling in different directions. So we've got this mixture of math and physics and art and changing underlying hardware speed, algorithms, the software that's there, the uses for it. People coming out of the colleges today have got a different set of experiences than a few years ago. The expectations of users is changing. There is nothing in this picture that is stable. And if you fully embrace that and you say, okay, I want all those elements in there. I want the instability because that's what keeps the creative juices flowing.
Right. That's how you keep your balance when you walk.
That's correct. It is a dynamic enterprise.
Okay.
And you have to think of it that way. And,
yeah,
and
so
what you want to do is actively keep yourself off balance.
Exactly. So that you don't die, like you said. Okay, a last question from the scientific point of view. I would love to hear your opinions about intellectual property. And I think you started discussing this early on, Ed, when you were saying that you had, at the time, the unusual style of just publishing everything instead of keeping it secret. And I would say, in the same idea, I would say compared to a few years back when the code for a method was carefully kept secret, there was almost like a industry secret that you could not share. Now we see open source projects everywhere, and in particular at Pixar, I know, for instance, a good example is OpenSubdiv, right, where you use it in your movies, and it's also handled by the R&D group. So what made you decide to expose your internal product like this in recent years? And how has that worked for Pixar? And how do you see it evolving within the industry as a whole and maybe even other industries, not just computer graphics?
Well, in OpenSubdiv in particular, we reached a point where we realized that the best way to get access to interactive modeling software, for instance, that models using the kinds of subdivision surfaces that we use, is for us to freely give away the engine that implements those surfaces. So by giving it away to the community, you know, tool vendors can, you know, create their tools on top of it. Other innovators around the world can add to it and make it better. The whole industry benefits, and we get carried along with that.
Yeah, I can give an example of where the fragmentation screwed things up. So go back several years ago, you had Windows, Mac operating system, and Unix.
We still do.
and at that time, the Mac and the Windows were not internet friendly, and they weren't multi-process. They were capable of doing that. Unix, in the beginning, started off that way. So it was way ahead. So now you've got a lot of workstation vendors, and they decide that one of their competitive advantages is going to be their version of Unix. So Unix ended up being fragmented all over the place with Sun and SGI and all these people with their different variations of it. And so basically it screwed it up because they thought that was somehow their advantage.
I see.
If there just had been one version, we could have gone and had a very different history. And for us, it's the same thing. We're not going to do everything else. And the nature of what we're doing is not based upon whether or not we write everything ourselves or whether or not we've got the best subdivision algorithm or the best way of holding data. That's not what's going to help us. What makes the biggest difference to us is that the tools that we acquire from others are compatible with what we're doing, and that the people here who are working on interesting problems aren't spending the time replicating what somebody else is doing, but they're doing something new based upon things that have happened in the past. Right. So that leads you down the path of saying, don't hold our stuff secret. That's not important. The important thing is solving new problems and getting the best people here.
Okay.
And you can get caught short by this, it makes it short-term thinking to try to help hold in everything for yourself.
Okay, so basically like in your book, you try to remove those forces that stand in the way of inspiration and future research. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're coming close to the end of this podcast. So I have to ask two last questions. First, what's next for you guys, either professionally or personally, if you want to share? And also, since SIGGRAPH will be in Vancouver this summer, is there anything special about Vancouver that you would like the listeners to know? Maybe some secret places that you you love over there? Just let me know what you think about both your future and Vancouver.
Well, Vancouver's a fantastic city. I remember being in one building there where we're looking over railroad tracks, fairly close to the bay there, looking across the water, and there were seaplanes in the water and cruise ships. And coming out of the other side, you saw the mountains coming up with white on the top. It was just spectacular.
Right.
Plus, just wonderful weather up there, too. And, of course, we had SIGGRAPH a few years ago, and it was really a wonderful conference, so a great place to be.
Hopefully we'll see you there.
I'll be there.
Good. And what's next for you?
Well, because the technology is changing, it means the way we work is different. So it's to think that through. It's organizationally, we have to adapt. Some of our structures were put in place in the early days of computer animation, and now the skill sets of people coming out of the school is very different. So this requires organizational changes inside the company. And then it means looking at what the possibilities are for the new technology. As Tony said, machine learning is clearly one of them. I think looking towards having all aspects of our work operate at which the people can make decisions immediately rather than having to wait for them is very important. We're there in some of the areas, but there are other areas where we're not.
Okay.
So they'll affect what we have for the filmmakers. And there are things coming up that we just don't know about. Just keep your eyes open for it. I get, every once in a while, go over to research and they'll do some really surprising things. Actually, I guess it was a month ago, I was in there with the research group, and they're going through some really sophisticated mathematics for driving driving simulation, but the consequence of this really heavy-duty sophisticated mathematics is the animators got this extraordinary thing where they just draw a line and things match against it. So it's like really hard stuff in order to make other things be simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great concept.
Well, isn't it what science is supposed to be about in many ways?
Yes.
Okay. What about you, Tony?
Well, over the last 5 to 10 years or so, I've gotten increasingly interested in educational outreach. How do we engage the next generation of, problem solvers and storytellers?
You have not just been interested, you've actually done it, as I can see in a lot of statement of purpose that students that are applying to our program, they do mention Pixar in a Box, they mention the Young Makers Program, and each time there is a mention to Tony right there. So you've had quite a bit of impact in STEM education.
That's really gratifying to hear, thanks. I'm thinking more about, what can we do to demonstrate the relevance and the creativity behind things that kids are learning in classrooms, right? So too often a student will ask, well, why do I need to know this stuff? And, parents and teachers often don't have a good answer.
That's right.
And it's kind of frustrating because there are really terrific answers to that kind of question.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to help, pull the covers back and show that just about anything you can learn in, through high school anyway, if not through college, we use all the time here for creative benefit.
So you think you're going to focus more on this now?
Yeah, I hope to. Yeah, I hope to, you know, reach an even bigger audience and, you know, maybe even broaden past, you know, what Pixar does in computer graphics and, you know, try to reach a broader group.
Great, great. And any hidden secrets about Vancouver that you want to reveal?
Oh, I don't know if it's a secret or not, but they're just, it's such a wonderful cosmopolitan city with, you know, so many interesting cultures, and those cultures express themselves in many ways, but, you know, restaurants is certainly one. So, you know, I encourage attendees to just pop into any restaurant that looks even a little bit interesting. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. You don't have to go to just the highest rated places on Zagat or whatever. Just, you know, drop into a neighborhood restaurant. I think you'll enjoy it.
And you can walk around, which is quite a concept for somebody that lives in Los Angeles, obviously. Yeah, it's a great city. It's one of my favorite cities for sure in Northern America. All right, Ed and Tony.
You can walk around anywhere. The issue is, can you get somewhere?
Yes, exactly. Because there's some parts of LA where you can walk for hours. And, well, I mean, it will be interesting, but it's not that fascinating compared to Vancouver. So,
Ed, I'm just trying to figure out the geometry of LA. It seems that everything is 5 minutes from everything else.
Well, thank God there's GPS, otherwise you would be lost. Well, it was delightful.
It's a hyperbolic map.
It's not Euclidean.
That's for sure. It was delightful to chat with both of you. I thank you so much for your time today. And like you said, since it seems like you're going to be in Vancouver this summer, I'll see you there. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, my dear.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of SIGGRAPH Spotlight. If you like the show, please subscribe or leave us a review on iTunes. For more information on the upcoming conference in Vancouver, visit s2018.siggraph.org.